This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well. Hey, it's Philosophy versus Improv. This is Mark Lintonmeyer gliding in from the heavens with giant spoonfuls of philosophy for you today.
And this is Bill Arnett burrowing up from the crust with a hobo's bindle of improv for y'all.
We have two guests, one of whom I've spoken with many times, Daniel Obel. Say hello to the folks.
How's it going, folks?
And an even more special guest, even more special, your partner on the We Think It's Funny. We Think It's Punny. That would be a different, a much worse, all puns podcast. We Think It's Funny podcast, Carson resident, star of stage and screen, Mark Schiff. Hello.
Oh, there. Well, guys, nice to see you.
Yeah.
Behind you, is that your dirty laundry I'm looking at?
Me?
Folks that merely listen to this and don't watch the video on YouTube will not see the amazing background that I downloaded 5 seconds before we went on air here. I was looking for comedy club backgrounds, and almost all the comedy club backgrounds have a picture of a mic in the middle, which is, I understand, is representative of a comedy club, but the mic, I have a mic already.
Yeah.
I don't need a mic behind my head.
What's also funny about Bill's mic is because of the perspective, it looks like he's talking into like a massive piece of old NASA equipment.
Yeah, look at that thing there, right?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Oh, was that me? Was that a dig on me? Are we ready to hit Europe? You got your vinyls back there, I see.
I have 600 comedy albums. Most of the comedians here are most people have never heard of and never will hear of them. Most of these albums are just absolutely terrible.
That's why I'm proud to be in there.
You ever hear these guys?
The Last Family, no.
No.
Nobody has.
What year is that? 60?
Okay, I've certainly heard of that.
Wow, the record for Who's On First. How late in their career did they release that? Or was that like, is that a 1945 LP?
I'm here. Another comedy one you've never heard of.
The First Cuban at the UN. I'm reading for the audio people. No.
So I bought this collection, and it's a huge collection of comedy. Although, there's a guy named Jeff Abraham. You know Jeff.
I know Jeff. He's got an even bigger collection.
He's got like 6,000 comedy albums. Something insane. I thought I had a lot, 600. This guy's got like 6,000 that are unlistenable.
I mean, are they listenable to you? You have a fresh turntable that you can...
I do. I have two, I was going to say Victrolas, but turntables here in the office.
Okay.
But most of them you can't get through. They're just... comedy albums are so cheap to make. It wasn't like a band, you know, where instruments are... A gal would go into the studio and talk into a microphone. They have a little crowd out there, or they record live at a theater somewhere.
Or some of them had no crowd, like the Jonathan Winters album and the Buddy Hackett Chinese Waiter album.
Mm-hmm. Buddy Hackett, an album with no laughter on it, just right. Talking.
So just podcasting, the Jonathan Winters podcast.
Podcasts on vinyl. Yeah.
Before podcasts, there were comedy albums, I guess, or some comedy albums.
Yeah.
Well, you need to catalog them, listen to them, put some reviews up.
It's a good point.
It's not a bad idea. You know, we should play one of them on the show every now and then on We Think It's Funny.
Well, we should play one bit and talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like of these unknown albums. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. There's a highlight in there. Yeah. Yeah.
I knew you guys had wrote something.
We think it's discussion worthy, I think, would be the new segment. I mean,
yes,
unless you're actually picking things that you find funny, but it seems like the most interesting things would be, as you're saying, the ones that are, how did this get made? Why does this even exist?
Nothing is funnier to comedians than unfunny comedians.
Yes. Yeah. We think it's funny in quotes. Is that the actual name of the podcast? Did you put it
in quotes? Yeah. Well, stuff can get dated as well. I mean, you know, certainly even good humor can be referential if it, you know, good political humor is dated immediately almost.
Yeah.
So it's tricky in that regard. I can also imagine, you know, the record company model here, you know, just as you said, they can just crap those things out. They got the equipment, they got the studio, they got the engineer. He's there for the day. May as well bring in some people.
Wow. Was that it?
That was the show. Well,
so I think, Jeff, I know from talking to Daniel before that there's a sharp division between, of course, the stage thing that is rehearsed and you have to be funny, and podcasting where, okay, there's just as many, there's more people. They're listening to a comedy podcast, but yet you're not putting on a show in the same way for them. I mean, do you think Is the "we think it's funny" referring to the subject matter of the show, comedy, or is it referring to the show itself?
It's a good question, but let me tell you, with comedians, do you guys do stand-up?
No.
I'm not done stand-up. Yeah.
I am a musician, so I fake stand-up between songs, but I don't actually have to be funny. It's optional when you're a musician.
See if Danny agrees or doesn't agree, but even though the podcast school, we think it's funny, even though it's a podcast, it's not a live audience per se. When I'm onto something that I think is funny, I will perform it as if there's an audience in front of me.
Sure.
I'll go for it in a very performing way, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then if we have a guest and Danny starts laughing, I up the ante with the performance. So, yes, we do perform it for whoever is eventually going to see it. I think it makes it better.
Yeah, I don't see anything to disagree with there. You know, we have both come up with things on the podcast that we've taken to the stage, you know?
Yeah.
When the brain is firing in comedy mode, you get stuff. You know, it's not going to be as polished as when you see it performed at the club because that's worked out and cleaned up. And
I mean, like when we had Brian Regan on, who's arguably one of the great comedians of this era, he was so funny that he brought out the best in us. Mm-hmm. And it was a show.
Yeah.
There was, I mean, a comedy show going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was killing me because we became his audience and I was doubled over with laughter. And then we got into a thing once about, I sold Danny some Talmud, some Jewish books. He's laughing already. And we just found this thing so funny that we could not stop laughing. And our guests just joined in. And then he got an email the other day from a guy that heard it. And he said he wants to buy the books off of Danny.
I told him, double what I paid.
So, it's entertainment. You guys are entertainment.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting thing is that so much of comedy and stand-up, you think about, we got to write a script. We got to prepare. We got to work it. We got to workshop this thing. Yet in the moment, it is live. And you don't know what the audience is going to latch on to, what they're not going to latch on to. And you can't just robotically go down your list and hit all your things and giggle and snort when you planned it. And I think some of the best comedians are the ones who are alive in the moment as well. They certainly know their material. They certainly have it rehearsed. They certainly know when all the little cues are and what has worked in the past, but they're reading the audience, reading the room, and alive in the moment. And just as you all described it, Mr. Regan does not know exactly what it is, what slight moment in that joke he's telling that hits with you, but I'm presuming a seasoned man like himself will follow that, knowing what hits, knowing what that crowd likes, and is going to follow that. Audiences don't come to check your homework. They don't show up to read your report. They come to see live performance.
Yeah.
Live isn't just you up there reading off a piece of paper either.
Sometimes we have to change gears in the middle. If it's not going well, we got to pick something else that we think. And, you know, stand-up comedy is Bill Cosby. And, you know, I know at one time he was the greatest stand-up comedian ever. You know, he's done terrible things. But he said stand-up comedy is like a jet plane. Every once in a while it goes down. You know, we all bomb still every once in a while. Danny more than me. But,
yeah. That's much, true. I'm not going to argue. That's what's so great about seeing comedy live in a club versus watching it on TV in a special, because there's less of an element of danger when you watch the special. You know that this has got, people have looked at it, it's been stamped for approval. When you go to the club, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, there's that element of like, this could all go terribly wrong. Like, you know, going to the circus and watching the trapeze acts, there's a little part of your brain that's like, oh, they might fall, you know, and that's exciting. But if it's already produced, you know, they're not going to fall.
I wrote a joke the other day and the setup got a laugh and I was not expecting that. And then the punchline, thank God I had that. And the joke was, and I never do political stuff, and this really isn't a political joke, but I said it was a really tough day. I came home the other day and ICE was at my house and they took away my gardener and my wife. And I got this big laugh on wife, which I didn't expect. And I said, does anybody know where I can get a new gardener? And boom, huge laugh.
Yeah.
But I was very surprised that when I said they took away my wife, too, that I got that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
All in the delivery, I assume.
Yes.
And my wife.
A lot of it's in the delivery, but you better have the words.
Yeah.
If it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage.
That was, you know, for some reason, I refer to it as the great algorithm, that thing that exists that just sends us stuff on our social media feeds, on our, you know, hey, here's something to check out. Here's some, you know, some video on YouTube or something that you might like.
Yeah.
The great algorithm, for whatever reason, in its omnipotence and wisdom, was sending me lots of information about public speaking. Don't know what I clicked on, don't want to watch, but I thought I should know about.
I think it monitored your, I sent it your unedited audio, and it was like, no,
Mark,
man.
Mark, you're ruining my feed, dude. Don't ruin my algorithm. Too many ums and ahs. Anyway, I clicked on a few videos. Why are they sending me this? And it was a few people going through, hey, start with a joke. Start with an improbable fact. Or start with all these things. And what struck me was that while it was all, I guess, relatively sound advice, none of the advice was speak clearly. Try to engage with your audience as a human being. Show some vulnerability. You know, connect on a human level with them. And it was interesting. You know, is that the hard part? You know, is that really the hard part? That rapport? Is that what you can only learn by getting on stage and doing it? Doing it and doing it and doing it? You finally start building that rapport.
I have one thing to say, and I'm sure you do.
Okay.
There's something that you have to have that you can't learn. That is likability.
Yeah.
Just you can't force an audience to like you. You either have that or you don't. When a comedian comes out, they have to immediately like you and trust you. Well, almost like a family member. Like an uncle or an aunt, whatever it is, an aunt. The rest of it can be learned. You can learn how to write funnier. You can learn how to do it better. You can learn timing, but you can't learn how to be likable.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true. And then I feel like another thing on top of that is that the audience sometimes, for me, like, I want the audience to be likable. You know, there are certain times when I go out there and I don't like the audience right off the bat. Have you had that, Mark? Or are you like, ugh, I got to pretend to like this audience?
Not anymore. Not anymore. That's called prejudging it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I try not to do it, but sometimes you see the way they were for the comedians before you, and then it's your turn to go up there, and you're like, ugh, I already don't like this crowd. I don't like what they laughed at, and I don't like.
I mean, when you accept jobs from the Klan rally.
That's just it. Danny, there's a lot of people that come out with Nazi uniforms. So immediately he doesn't like them, you know, but then they don't like him. So it's a tough set.
I just say they need to keep their uniforms clean and pressed.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be. And if they're going to. And that's what the Fuhrer would have approved on.
So you look for the likable thing in them. I hate your ideology. I hate the way you're sneering at me, but I really do like that jacket. I mean,
I had a show in Chicago last week.
Okay.
It was me and another comic. He went on first.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw the way the audience was with him. I said, somebody in my brain was like, man, I love this audience. I can't wait to get up there in front of this audience. And when I went up there, it was just a magical show because I already loved them, and then they loved me, and I was so in the moment with them, I felt like I was hanging out with my friends. It was terrific. I wish every show was like that. Maybe one day it will be for me, but, you know, sometimes I'll sit there, and I'll watch an audience, and I'll be like, oh, they should have laughed at that with the other comic, or I can't believe they laughed at that. That's where they're at?
Yeah.
You know, I don't really like who I'm about to go perform for.
Well, that's true. I remember I did a show in Cleveland many years ago, and the opening act for me was an incredibly racist guy. Unbelievably, giving these black jokes, and the audience was laughing so hard and so loud, and I said, I hate this audience. Laughing at this garbage.
Yeah.
This is the biggest bunch of racists I've ever, you know, the whole audience, I ended up getting fired that week.
I blame Cleveland.
In Cleveland.
We blame Cleveland for a lot. Let's just dogpile on Cleveland.
I said to the owner of the club, I said, listen, I cannot work with this guy.
Yeah.
He's a racist. He uses the N-word on stage.
Yeah.
And the guy fired me. Absolutely true story. But I, in that particular case, I had to hate the audience.
Yeah.
So woke, Mark. You're just so woke. I think what Bill was creeping around in the previous question was, have you guys had formal improv activities in your many years of doing comedy? I know we had Maddie Goldberg, thanks to Daniel's reference on the show before, sort of compared the improv comedy versus the stand-up comedy. Clearly, improv is part of what you do as stand-ups, but like, has there been any make-believe? I'm not Mark. I'm not Danny. I'm some other people, and we're making up a thing on the spot, that kind of thing, or is that...
I've done that.
Yeah.
I used to, for many years, close my act. I would say, when I had a piano player on stage at the clubs, a lot of the comedy clubs would have a piano player in New York, the Improv, Catch a Ride. Mm-hmm. They all had a piano player. So I would say to the audience, give me an opening line and a closing line, and I will improv a blues song right in front of you right now.
Yeah.
I did. I would make it up, and many times it really, really went great. There was another guy that did that, J.J. Wall, and he used to improvise a blues song, and that was so much fun.
Mm-hmm. And now that we only have the Comedy Store where they still have a pianist in the main room, right? But or the original.
Yeah.
But I've done improv. Like I did Second City, graduated their whole program. I did some shows there. I loved it. I was never part of an improv troupe, but I did house shows at some point. And
Certainly.
And some of your videos that clearly are informed by that, I've seen.
Yes. Well, no, there's something about the immediacy that's a whole different angle. When the audience understands that this is immediate.
With improvs?
With improvs, yeah. I don't want to say card trick aspect to it, but they understand that it's immediate and unrehearsed. It's impressive in its own regard.
It's not true.
Okay.
Because what they'll do is they'll say to the audience, give us a type of theater. You know, Shakespeare, somebody else. Give us a job, a hooker. And they've done it 3,000 times. You know exactly who's doing what. And there are some moments in there, of course, that will be different.
I will say some improvisers do that, but not all of them.
It's improvised right on the spot.
Yes. I would never put myself in a situation where, now again, boy, improv ain't what it used to be, and it has changed a lot. And just like there's many genres of music and many genres of things, and I'm sure, you know, being in Chicago, if you did Second City out here, you're going to get exposed to a different flavor of that thing. Mark, I know that improviser, but it ain't all of us.
Robin Williams and Jonathan Winters, two of the great improvisers of all time.
So, Bill, you're an improviser?
I am.
He's an improvised instructor.
Okay. But I work here in Chicago, mostly at the I.O. Theater. Certainly done stuff at the other theaters around here as well.
Yeah.
It's fun to do, and it's mostly long-form kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's cool, and it's fun, and I'm sure you at Second City got a taste of a little bit of the Chicago style, Chicago flavor.
I love being part of Second City. I actually just visited Second City Chicago for the first time.
Okay, yeah.
This past week, because I'm an alumni, they let me put my name on the wall, which was pretty nice.
Hey, there we go. Very fun. Yeah. Today's show is brought to you by our sponsor, Surfshark VPN. Secure privacy with Surfshark. Go to surfshark.com/improv. That's right, not philosophy, but improv, for 4 extra months of Surfshark. Internet security is more crucial than ever. Protect your online life with military-grade encryption and enjoy a secure, unrestricted internet experience. With Surfshark VPN, you can shield your data on public Wi-Fi and avoid identity theft and fraud. It keeps you safe, even in the most insecure online environments. Never worry about who's spying on your data again. Surfshark's got you covered. Geo-restrictions are now a thing of the past with Surfshark. You can break through online barriers and access content from all over the world. Whether it's streaming your favorite shows or accessing blocked websites, Surfshark ensures you stay connected wherever you are. I've been using VPNs for a while now. What I really like, they're seamless. They just exist behind the scenes doing their job. It's time to take control of your online security. Try Surfshark risk-free today and enjoy their 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to surfshark.com/improv. Sorry again, Mark, for 4 extra months of Surfshark. That's code improv. That's got a sting, Mark. It's got a sting at surfshark.com. URL and code can be found in our show notes.
You know what's interesting? I love doing improv. I don't like watching it.
I've made that remark many times. I mean, the point of this podcast in its inception was I'm trained in philosophy. He wanted to learn some. Or, you know, at least he was willing.
Ostensibly.
I mean, I initiated it, but I wanted to get improv lessons without having to actually pay for them. So this is. We've been doing this for 4 years now.
Very good.
And you seemed surprised when I referred to your old videos, Daniel. I'm looking at some Sammy the Israel ones. Is that not like sort of a Pee Wee Herman sort of like I'm in a character and I'm going to improvise stuff?
Yeah, I love doing it. I went to see a show at Second City in Chicago and it was terrific, but it was sketch.
Sure.
Sketch I like, because sketch is like stand-up. It's written, it's worked out, you know, it's performed more like acting, but the jokes are written. They're clever, smart, usually well-developed ideas that have been honed for the stage. So watching sketch, to me, is kind of akin to watching stand-up. But watching improv, it's just, you know, like, I don't want to watch somebody's writing
stuff. What was that show that Drew Carey had on TV for years?
Whose line is it anyway? Yeah, that's short-form improv. It's more gimmicky. Some of these podcasts, what Bill has been trained in is this long form where you just, even though we're still doing 5 minute sketches,
yes,
you know, they're still not actually long form, though you could, and there are many podcasts that do carry characters over the entire podcast, but you know, for years.
Yeah. The Larry David Show. Why can't I think of the name of that?
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Curb Your Enthusiasm uses a lot of long form, a lot of the Christopher Guest movies, Waiting for Guffman, want to use a lot of that stuff as well. Now, certainly when you're making a movie or making a TV show, you've got to be quite judicious, roll a lot of tape, and do some things here or there. But this idea of playing a person, having behaviors, and having a character underneath all that stuff is more in that long-form Chicago-style domain.
It's funny because most stand-ups don't want to talk about improv. They don't want to think about improv. They can't
stand improv. Correct.
You're the brave and the exceptional because this has all been working up to...
They don't like stand-ups. It's... Yeah, I do. I think I'm one of the few people who like both, but, you know.
Yes.
Some of the great stand-up comedians came out of Second City many years ago. David Steinberg, Shelley Berman. And then all of Saturday Night Live's first cast, practically, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And the way you described your podcast as potentially a place to work out material, I mean, that's exactly how Danny was just describing improv. I don't want to see them work out their material. Well, then I don't want to listen to your podcast where you're working. You know, it, I think it's a comparable thing where I'm not, I do like your podcast. Let me be clear about that. But you stumble across something, you know, you just, you go in there without anything prepped, without, well, you bring in like a news story. You have some prompts.
Right.
Right. But you're going to make the funny because you know you can. And at least as a mere beginner improv, you know, I don't know that I can. Maybe everything I do is in horrible taste, but I rely on Bill to tell me that it was okay because I'm very insecure about it.
Yeah. There is something fun to making those discoveries and the audience hearing your process and enjoying your process. I think there's something interesting to that. And I bet your fans do too.
I'll give you another complaint I have about improv. It's not a great circuit for improv like there is for stand up. Like, I think it'd be wonderful if you could be an improviser and you could tour around and you could get on stage all over the country as an improviser, get booked and just, like, you know, jump into different stages and do stuff. It's not like that. You have to be part of a troupe. You have to be part of a...
Correct. That does kind of kneecap it a little bit. Not going to lie.
Yeah, wouldn't it just be the same comedy clubs that, like, the state or, you know, whatever the troupe is just ends up playing at the same places you'd be doing stand-up? Is that not...
No.
Never
no.
So the stand-up stages can be kind of small. You only get two or three people on a club stand-up stage.
Yeah, but here, let me give you an example. So I'm a... Yeah. Mark and I are stand-up comics. We could go play the Laugh Factory this week. We could play the Improv next week. We could go to Chicago and play Zanies. We could go all around, jump on different stages, perform with different comedians. They don't have that with improv.
Yeah.
And if I was to rewrite improv, which I, you know, no one's asking me to, but if I would rewrite the way it goes, I would have it so that you could be an improv comic and you could go, you know, from, if you're a Groundlings person, you could go perform at Second City or vice versa, whatever it is, you get booked, put in your avails and go and perform with whoever the other comics in the town are. And do a show.
Yeah.
And make a living doing that. That's how it should be. But it isn't.
Well, no. A lot of improvisers end up getting careers as writers, actors, production, a lot of the other jobs.
Because they never figured out how to make it a career.
Yeah.
Improv itself. That's my critique of it.
It's a stepping stone to something else. Stand-up isn't necessarily that.
Right.
You know, I mean, I've been doing it forever and... Jerry Seinfeld was lucky to get a TV show. He's incredibly talented, one of the best shows ever in history. But he didn't use it as a stepping stone. It just kind of happened and rolled out that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he went back to stand-up, achieved his goal with television, and that was it. He went back to doing stand-up.
I did Chicago with him. We did that 5,000-seater. What's it called, the theater?
There are many. The Chicago Theater. The Athenaeum.
That one too, but the Fox in Chicago, isn't there?
I'm not sure. There's a few that have changed their names a few times.
5,000.
Cadillac?
No. Hit me two more. Can you think of two more names?
if you're cool with me Googling it.
Generate them like ChatGPT. Generate them, Bill, out of your imagination.
But I believe you. It was a 5,000-seat room. I got it. Yep.
The Funny Flamingo.
Right outside of Chicago, we went to Indiana. We drove there from Chicago. Right? Like an hour.
A lot of casinos right across the board.
We did a casino about 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So this has all been building up. We'd like to, Bill can guide us as the instructor to run a scene right now with the four of us in it. That's part of our normal format. Do you consent to be part of this experience that we will try to incorporate some of the ideas that have come up in the conversation so far into not more than five minutes of us goofing around here.
Go ahead.
Let's do it. Do you have something, Mark? You want me to start this thing? How are you feeling?
You go ahead, Bill.
Okay. Hey, everybody. I just wanted to call this meeting. We got a big holiday thing to plan for the company holiday party. And I know a lot of people have some opinions, what we should have, what we shouldn't have. Last year, we had that offensive stand-up, and that, not going to lie, I nearly got canned for that, not going to lie.
Why'd you hire him?
I didn't know he was racist. Maybe I should have done my due diligence. I don't know.
Well, I do appreciate you hiring my father.
He was your brother.
Father.
His dad.
He was your... Yeah. Wait a minute. Wait. He was your father? That racist comedian was your father?
Absolutely.
That's why I was pushing for him, too. I wasn't big on the racism. I just wanted to see his old man get some work.
I almost got fired, y'all. You should have... Why didn't you warn me? What's going on?
I mean, when you hire somebody who's like 85 years old, they're probably going to be racist.
And, you know, I mean, he did wear the sheet. There should have been a sign.
Yeah. You guys were all about it when he showed up in the sheet. What was that about?
Yeah, I mean, you thought it was a joke?
I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a barber. I thought he was going to do a bunch of jokes about being a barber.
Well, he takes it very seriously, his dad. You know, it's part of his social life.
Yeah. Yeah. He's working in Vienna now.
Austria?
Yes, he is. And he's
big. Okay.
He's huge. I'm telling you, he sells out a lot of the roller rinks.
This is news to me. This is news to me. Are you cool? Are you cool with your dad being a racist stand-up? Is this...
I don't underplay the fact that you nearly got fired, but a lot of us at the company really enjoyed his dad, aside from the racism, you know. We thought he had a great persona, a great delivery. And sure, he was racist, anti-Semitic, and... You know, and he said some vile things, but great facial expressions. He did a lot of mugging. He was very animated up there. I thought that was good.
He was kind of representing a type.
I got a letter from the vice president, Mr. Himmler, and he really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised you got almost fired, Bill. It seems like the management was behind this.
And the other thing that was good about it was that they had those whitefish sandwiches. Everybody enjoyed that because it was
beautiful.
You know, they said,
well, we can do that again this year. That's fine. We can do that. We can do the same catering again. I think there was no complaints with the catering. I think it was the entertainment.
Whitefish Supremacy they had?
Yeah. Whitefish Supreme.
Whitefish Supreme. That's what it was.
Yeah.
We can, y'all, we can keep the caterer.
Yeah.
But maybe not that label specifically.
So we want to just mention a young comedian for this year's show.
Okay.
We think is really good.
All right. Are they a family relation?
No, not related.
Okay. All right. That's sounding better.
My wife has gone away with him for weekends, but he's not related.
No. They're very close. They are in a book club together.
Yeah. And he spent about, 10 years with the Zulu.
Okay.
Yeah. So it can't be racist if you spend 10 years with a Zulu tribe, right?
That's, yeah.
No, but you've only sent me his information. What is he? You said he's a stand-up?
He doesn't really stand up. He has one leg, so he kind of just falls over a lot.
And doesn't your wife have a kid with him?
Yeah, they do, Muhu.
Yeah, Muhu. He's a Zulu. He's half Zulu and half Jewish.
Yeah, Muhu.
Yeah.
Muhu Zulu.
Huh. Okay.
Very nice kid. My father actually works with him. Kids
y'all. I'm not. This isn't about favors. We're not. This isn't about giving. This is about providing a quality entertainment for our fellow employees.
Zulu is a tribe, which is kind of like a company, and he did good with tribes. If you do good with tribes, it stands to reason you could do good with companies, right?
I'm familiar, yes, with the Zulu people.
Mr. Davis, I'm Googling this guy, and I think there's some problematic stuff that you might want to look out for. It's not just the standing up. It's the being pushed around by the audience as if you were some sort of ping pong, something. And this is not a very coherent review. It sounds very physical. Are you okay with physical comedy?
In principle, but I bet you've been to a show. Maybe we can call Second City. Maybe we can call one of the theaters here in town. That's what maybe they can recommend somebody rather than a family.
This year we could do a Mentalist.
They're okay, a mental. I think that'd be fun. We'll just leave the whole stand-up thing. How can you be a racist mentalist? I don't know. You know, maybe this is
a guy who I think would do good for it.
Okay.
Yeah, he is mental.
Like card tricks and like predicting.
Comes from a mental home, I guess, which is a home of mentalists.
But you can't be, you know, I mean, like, for instance, let's say I was a mentalist and I go, you're Jewish. You're circumcised.
Okay. That's right on the line. I'm going to say it right now. Do you know what a mentalist is? Because it sounds like you may be confusing it.
Who's completely mental. You know, he's out of his mind.
Every wife is a mentalist.
Yeah.
My wife knows exactly what I'm thinking, when I'm thinking it, and before I think it.
We're not hiring your wife. We're not hiring your wife for entertainment.
Well, if you just a point about his wife, she does a fantastic lentil soup. She could be a good lentilist, too.
Well, she also calls it mental soup.
Mentalist lentilist.
She's a mentalist lentilist.
Yeah.
Well, are we scrapping the whitefish sandwiches or are we keeping the whitefish?
If you're going to have a mentalist, then they're going to be able to read everybody's thoughts. And so you're going to have the whitefish supreme and you're going to be able to see each person that sees that sign that says it's the white. You're going to be able to see their racist thoughts. So this is the problem. Even if the mentalist is not him or herself racist, they know the racism in, they know the dark heart of man is what I'm saying. Do you want
I think you're reading too much into a mentalist. I think it's an act.
Doesn't your wife also work at a dental clinic? Isn't she a dentalist?
She's a dentalist, lentilist, mentalist.
That's hygienist. Right. It's called a hygienist.
A gentilist.
Not a dentalist.
She's very gentle, but she's a hygienist.
And when she gets mad, she's a great ventilist, isn't she?
Yeah, she can vent like crazy.
Okay, just to clarify, mentalists aren't people who are insane or struggle with mental illness. Mentalists are people
who... You may be wrong about that. I don't want to...
I've met mentalists. They struggle with mental issues.
Oh, yes.
Because they don't look at themselves. They're always looking at other people, what they're thinking.
That's right.
Well, how about a magician? Well, we hire a magician. Let's just leave that whole word to the side and find a magician. Fingers crossed y'all don't know any magicians.
I worked with a magician recently.
Okay.
And he was so bad, he made the audience disappear.
I hope that was a joke. I really do hope that was a joke.
They were out of there in about 2 minutes. This guy was so bad.
We're not going to hire him? We're not going to. Y'all, we've already, this has been a long meeting. We need somebody for this thing.
Can we get a real magician, like who can see the other side and like?
I tell you, if someone would like to volunteer to call the Magic Club, right, the Magic Castle up on Reston and Bryn Mawr, fantastic.
Those guys are a bunch of frauds. They're not actually in touch with the forces beyond. I mean, I'm talking about like a real Cthulhu kind of magician who can summon. I mean,
a wizard. A wizard. Yes. You want a wizard.
Yes.
Boss, you're always telling me to think outside the box, right? I'm going to throw out a wild idea, and I think you're going to love it. I say we scrap the entertainment altogether. We get rid of mentalists, magicians, and we just get someone who comes in with a blood pressure cuff and goes around and takes everybody's blood pressure, because that's something we should know, and it would be nice.
Yeah. And then we'll put my father on and take the blood pressure again.
That's right.
And see if it's gone up at all.
Let's see, maybe
science. So you want a science holiday party. That's what I mean. Science for
a physicalist. A physicalist instead of a mentalist.
It's called a physician. It's a y'all, there's some naming. We need to get a spreadsheet together, I fear.
I think physician, you need to get a certain amount of training. A physicalist, a little less.
Let us just end this with the thing. Danny and I feel that we deserve a raise.
Yeah.
Now.
I mean, I've been working for the company for 3 weeks now. I think I've done a hell of a job, Danny.
You got his dad involved.
How long have you been with the company?
I'm on and off. I come in every now and then when my schedule allows for it.
So I think 40%.
I'm an ideas man. You guys always say, what do you do at the company? And I've told you this, and I want to make it clear to everyone in this boardroom. I am an ideas man. I come in with ideas, like the blood pressure cuff. And I give you ideas. And I think ideas are the seeds upon which all businesses thrive.
It's the blood of a good company.
That's correct.
Good ideas.
That's right. And so there you have it. I think I might be the most valuable guy in the company. Being perfectly honest, I think you should step down and give me your job.
And I think you should step down and give me your job.
You think now is the best time to have that conversation? That's what we're thinking.
Well, we're all here.
Now is when we should have this.
But I'll tell you what, if you give me your job, I'll hire you to work for me so you still have a job.
And if you give me your job, I'll hire you to work as an assistant to my assistant.
That's good. You'll both be gainfully employed, and you know your employers are good people because you already have experience with us.
And every day you come to work, there will be lentil soup.
That's right. And all the pressure that you're feeling right now to put together a good company meeting and you might get fired, that's all off you. You don't have to worry.
Pressure's off. You've got a new lease on life. We're offering you an opportunity of a lifetime. Take it.
Take it now or it's off the table.
Well, I think the first thing we're going to do is not have a holiday party and just give everybody a $50 gift card. I think that would be best. I think that would just be just everyone in the company.
I'll take it.
This is the money we would have spent on a holiday party. Go out and have a date night, you know.
We'll take
the $50
and
too.
Forget about everything we just said about promotions.
Yeah, I'm in.
I'm in. Thank you.
Is this the plan? Okay. Yeah.
Meeting adjourned.
Things up there.
All right. I think there was something.
Hey, well done. Well done, everybody.
Stuff in there.
Yeah.
With a better teacher, I think we could have scored. We might have had a career. You did great, you guys. You really did great. I can see why you don't work.
I feel like you guys have some pre-existing chemistry that you were leveraging there. I think there's...
No one said we couldn't.
I guess that's a part of being in a room together is also, and being a room together for a long time. Bill and I have been in a room together once in the last 4 years. We had one meal together. We were on the stage for one show in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, it has been this thing where I can't even smell him.
I think it's part of it is being surrounded by some of the worst comedy of all time. There's a magic in the air.
Yeah, it's a very low bar.
I met in a room. We met in the bathroom at Yankee Stadium. We shared a urinal. And I said, I want to work with this guy.
Yeah, because I'm very conservative. You know, I'm a conservationist. I didn't want to waste water using an entire other urinal. So I said, hey, let's just, you know, save the environment, pee together.
You ever see those waterless urinals that says,
yeah,
where does it go?
You know something? Those waterless urinals really make you question all the ones with the water. Do we need the water?
Do we really need it?
I don't know.
Is it like a vacuum that you just put your dick in there and it just kind of...
Never stick around long enough to hear it.
Yeah.
I'm out of there.
There's nothing that cleans it. That's it. It's like peeing on a wall.
You know, if you want to do something that really... If you ever go into a men's room, it's like six urinals, is one guy standing at one. Just stand right behind him, even though there are five other open ones.
Right.
And they get very upset and very worried. Like, why are you standing there when you're... And just come up with something like, this is my favorite urinal you're using. I use when I'm here. And they run out of there so fast, these people. That's,
I mean, it probably is. You've got a captive audience. So anything you want to say, if you want to try out some new jokes, if you want to have, you know, your urinal humor. What about those troughs they used to have? Why don't they have those troughs? I want to see the splash of everybody in the row.
The closest I've ever come to big success in my career was at a urinal. I was at the Beverly Hills Hotel. I went to the urinal, and standing right next to me at the urinal next to me, Lorne Michaels. And that was the closest I ever came to success, because all I would have had was strike a conversation, get on Saturday
Night Live. Yeah, yeah. So, how's your piss, huh?
These two guys are standing next to each other at a urinal. And one guy says, they don't know each other. One guy says, the other guy, I think we had the same moil. And the other guy goes, what makes you think that? He goes, because you're peeing on my foot.
So there's a little sidewinder in there. Yes.
I just turned because there was no divider between the urinals when I peed next to Lorne Michaels. If I would have just turned and shook his hand but continued peeing, you know, I would have hit him, but it would have left an impression, you know.
He would have been the biggest.
The biggest. He would have looked it's funny. He peed on
No such thing as bad press.
There you go.
No such thing as bad press. He will remember you, the guy who pissed on him. I guarantee that. I ain't going to forget that.
Now, that's an interesting thing, and I've thought about that. Do you think that Diddy agrees with that philosophy now? There's no such thing as bad press?
It's being tested. well, it's that whole thing, you know, I mean, out of sight, out of mind. I mean, come on. Now, you guys have been around the entertainment world enough to know you don't want to fall off the radar. You know, you got to work enough.
But things happen to people that you don't want people to do, like Bill Cosby.
That's bad press.
It's bad press.
We can't just reach for the absolute worst example and say, see, I told you bad press is such thing as bad press. All right, well.
I know Schwarzenegger, not the absolute worst, but he had a baby with his cleaning lady.
Mm-hmm.
Bad press.
Good press. At Jeffrey Epstein, very bad.
Bad press.
Very bad.
Well, yes, the worst press. I would say it's hard to get worse than that. But in seriousness, though, I'm sure you guys probably, you know, you agents and managers, you got to stay on the radar. You have to, you know, it's like have them be thinking about you.
I've managed to stay completely off the radar. Anywhere near the radar, I'd run.
Right. But, you know, what just happened with Iran and Israel. Now, Iran had no more radar, so it was a good thing.
Yeah. No radar. No.
They were off the radar.
Yeah.
Look how nice.
Fantastic.
Yes.
It's all debatable. On the radar, off the radar, good press, bad press.
Can you be on the radar but off the grid?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think so. I think the grid and the radar are connected.
If you're looking for somebody, they're on your radar. So I would think most of the most wanted criminals are on the radar, but yet off the grid. Otherwise, they would be caught.
There we go. There we go.
Off the radar, off the grid, and on the path?
On the path.
Well, they may be on the path. Are they walking down it? Are they walking backwards? You know.
When that Saddam was off the radar in his gully,
yeah.
I don't think he was on the path to enlightenment. There, at least it didn't show. It would have been very surprising if when he was finally pulled out of the pit,
yeah.
that he was like, oh, I'm a Buddhist now.
Sorry, but if you're on the path and you don't like what's happening, can you walk it back?
Exactly. I'm on the path, but I'm actually just pissing on a tree right now. I'll get back on the path. I stepped off that briefly to relieve myself.
See, I didn't know we would have an explicitly philosophical topic here, and here we are. We've stumbled into it, which is your progress.
We just did an improv. That was an improv, right
yes.
or wrong?
Yes, it was.
Yes.
We said a word, a sentence, and then we all mishmashed together and threw in a little very funny stuff.
Yes.
I think what we've done here is we've developed one of the world's newest improv troupes.
I think you and I should go into improv now. I couldn't stand it. Yeah, you guys are convinced us we're in the wrong business.
Do you ever do any shows together, like on stage at the same, a two-man act?
Well, we did one time, yeah.
We worked Vegas together, and the guy who booked us is dead.
Yeah, that's according to anyone who wants to book
that. Yeah, that.
That's a bad show. Us.
Yeah.
He got a disease from watching us.
Luckily, we got paid first, but, you know, that doesn't work.
That's a whole radar you can't even get on anymore.
Yeah.
Does a dentist ever say it's like pulling teeth?
You mean the thing that I do every day? Washing dishes, it's like pulling teeth. What, you know?
Yeah. Pulling teeth for them is easy. They got all the tools.
Right.
Maybe they would use it in a completely different context, like something that's super easy. It's like pulling teeth.
Yeah.
So what's next? What's the path? The path has taken you to bring you together, to be doing this thing, to doing the philosophical idea I had to come in here with, I'll just throw out, was reminiscence, because that seems to be what takes up at least the episodes that I listen to of your podcast. Because, of course, I gravitated to the famous people. And so they're all people that Mark has known, at least, and some that Danny's known, but for years and years and years. And so it's a lot of like, you remember in 1981 when we were doing this thing? And just sort of what the, yeah. So is the path just now more time than you spent on stage? You spent talking to Danny, reminiscing about the path. Is that the path? Is that the shape of the path?
Well, we have an idea for an episode where we're going to bring my wife in, been married 35 years. I'm going to tell her I've been cheating on her for most of the time. And we're going to see how that goes. That could be a good episode.
That's not a bad idea.
And then when she says, I don't believe you, I'm going to bring in two women that I've been cheating with.
You know, what we might want to do is put foam on the walls for that one.
Why women? Why don't you could just call her in right now and we can be the two women. We could run this as the second improv scene.
Okay. Improv for us, not for her.
Calling your bluff.
Yeah. You know, we have our guests and we have a very easygoing podcast. People seem to like us together and they come back to hear more of us.
We don't have an agenda when we get on the air. You know, we just want to be funny. That's our only
agenda. Not Sacco and Vanzetti.
I feel like, Danny, you have a little bit of an agenda that there'll be some nice reminiscing and then you'll jump in of like, do you still believe in God? You'll get right to a few central philosophical questions.
We do try to, in a very light way, you know, express our belief in...
We try to understand, like, where people are at in the universe, you know, like...
Sure.
There is some philosophy to it. I mean, maybe from all the years of doing modern-day philosophers, it's kind of in my system, but, you know...
Would you say most of the people who ask that question to are atheists?
A lot of them are, yeah. A lot of comedians are atheists because, I don't know, it's just a solitary thing.
It can be a lonely life, and it can be very isolating.
It's a very communal thing, and stand-up is a very solitary thing.
Yeah.
So I think more improv people that I met were God believers, and more stand-ups were atheists. Because in improv, you have to rely on others. It's not all in your hands. There has to be more of an element of faith for things to go well. And with stand-up, everybody thinks, I got this, you know? So that's a very atheist kind of...
You can hone it, you can sharpen it, you can rehearse it, and it'll be perfect. And I don't need anybody help, and this is it. And yeah.
There's no such thing as perfect in stand-up comedy. It just doesn't exist. There's really great nights. We have some very special, really nice, great nights, and then other nights that are good. Generally, you get to a point as a stand-up comic where you're the only one that knows you didn't hit your stride.
Sure.
Yeah, and we know, and we always know we have work to do.
Totally. Exactly.
It's a very ethereal thing, too. You know, like, it's like, for years we've been making something, but we've got nothing to show you what we made. You know, you're there, you see it, but then you can't take it home with you.
Yeah.
It's there and it's gone. Like I said, even if you have a recording of it, it's the magic of that moment is gone. The danger of that moment is gone.
It just,
you know,
comes air.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the great thing about stand-up, we don't need anything. We just need we need a stool and a bottle of water and a microphone. That's it. I could go through, and so could Danny, through the door right behind us. There could be 6,000 people there, and we could just start doing it 1 minute from now.
And by the way, we've both done shows where we don't have a stool, a bottle of water, or a microphone.
You have to crap out your own stool right there on the stage.
Shelley Berman used to take his stool on the road with him.
Gross.
Was it the custom height so he could be extra high and like swing his legs around or some other something that he could spin?
Yeah.
I can understand that people have good luck pieces.
Yeah. And there's always people with crazy riders and things on their contracts or want certain things. And I'm sure a lot of that's superstition and whatnot. And
I mean, to pursue the metaphor a little more, it seems like improv might be a specifically Catholic thing in that the Holy Ghost. You gotta have the energy on the stage. You gotta have the tangible thing passing, but unseen thing passing between you.
Oh yeah, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. You got a troop.
There you go.
There we go. The Holy Trinity.
Yeah, you got an improv group right there. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
And I'll tell you another thing that bums me out about improv. You know, you have bands that make it big, like the Beatles. Is a great example of like the most.
Yeah.
Right. But you never have an improv troupe that makes it big.
Not really. Yeah.
I mean, Kevin Allison of The State, one of our previous guests, I think would beg to differ. Right? They're a sketch group. That's not improv.
But again, perhaps making it big is not. What if that's not the path to happiness?
The State was a TV show. I guess, you know, making it big in that way would be TV. But I mean, like, as a touring
club. UCB, yes, the UCB TV show. Yeah,
they had a TV show. Yeah.
We're making it big is if you can earn a living doing what you love doing.
There we go.
You've made it big.
Everything else is gravy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have friends that have made hundreds of millions of dollars. It's fantastic. But if you ask them, it's the fact that they could keep working is a big deal. That's why Jerry went back to it. You know, a lot of money. But then the older I get, the more I'm just grateful that I've been able to work at something I enjoy.
Well, that sounds like the path. That sounds like you've been on the path. The path does not go anywhere. The path is about the journey of the path.
That's right.
Although I'm sure you're glad you're not working under the stand-up conditions that you were working in when you were 25.
Well, they were exactly what I needed at that time to get good. I still work those clubs, and so does Danny. You know, we go to these little clubs to work out and practice, and it could be 8 people, 12 people. I'm going to go do something soon in a couple of weeks for this lady. It might be 20 people there, 18 people, and it doesn't matter. You know, when I first started, sometimes I get on so late, there'd be 2 people left in the room.
That's what I was, yes, as an aging musician, like, I just can't play a 1 a.m. gig, you know, with a string of 4 bands at some bar on a Wednesday.
Don Rickles used to do a 2 and a 5 a.m. show in a lounge to just drunks. Look how good he got.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember starting out, I'd often, you know, they put you on last. And I'd often watch like what would be a hot room turn into an empty room of all empty beer bottles and 2 drunk people from Staten Island in the back, you know, and you're like, okay, I'll take it, you know, stage time.
Yeah.
By the way, you know, I knew I had a funny routine when there was only 2 people in the audience. I'll tell you, when the waiter or waitress is cleaning up and you do a routine and you hear them laugh.
Yes.
Oh, you're onto something because they've heard 600 hours of comedy material in the last 3 weeks. And if you can get them to go, I may have something here.
At an improv club, when you make the bartenders laugh, that's always a good thing.
Because they've been through it all. It's a big deal.
Great sign. Fantastic sign. Yeah.
It's like when you walk into the barber. Laughs.
and they snicker. Yes.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Shouldn't I be the one wearing the apron?
Yeah.
Walk into a racist barbershop.
And Bill demands, like, haircuts based on amount of hair. Like, I want a discount. That guy paid $15. I should definitely only pay $7.
Yes. By follicle.
That seems fair.
0.01 cent per strand.
You guys still sit on that little plank that they put the kids on when you go in the chair? Remember that little thing that
they I'm plenty tall.
Remember that little plank that they
little box? Yeah.
Well, we don't have to probably is because the microphone looks huge in that image. Yeah. He could be an Oompa Loompa for all we know. Yeah. He could be a tiny.
It's just, you know, I can put it there.
Bring it back. Bring it back, Bill. We need to hear you better.
No shame.
There you
no
go.
No shame.
Ugh. Yeah. You scared me for a second there. Well, we've kind of reached our hour. Do you have any questions for us?
Yeah, how do you get rid of syphilis?
I mean, you just kind of explain to it that it's not welcome in these parts. You got to lay down the law. You got to really try to understand where the syphilis is coming from. Maybe pass it on to a few. Pass it on to a few people. So it's like the ring. That as long as you pass it on before you cure it, then it won't get mad.
See, that's a great opening line at a party. You meet somebody for the first time. How are you? How do you get rid of syphilis? Do you have any idea?
Right.
And then you either made a friend for life or they're out of there really quick.
Cut the small talk. Get right to it.
Yeah. I'm going to say penicillin. I'm just going to write out for any listeners out there for whom they are suffering from venereal disease. I'm going to say penicillin.
And there's somebody else who says, hey, you know, I have it too. Let's get together.
Yeah. You can't give it to me. I can't give it to you. I think we have an evening here.
All right. Well, you guys have come up with a name for this episode, Syphilis, with Mark Schiff and Daniel Obel.
So, I'll tell people check out our YouTube channel. We've been really building up the YouTube channel for We Think It's Funny. And if everybody can go and subscribe, that would get us another 10 people, and we'd really appreciate it. And
could be 9. Let's cross our fingers for 10. Let's just.
How long have you guys been doing this show now?
Finishing up the fourth year.
Yeah, that's good. You still love it?
Almost graduated.
You're very good at what you do. I'll tell you that. You work with the best. And you guys are.
Well, it's a real honor to talk to both of you. And
super fun, y'all. Super fun.
It's been a great hang. You know, next time I'll be back in Chicago, September.
I'll be here.
And have a bite or something.
I'm only 2 hours north of there. Maybe I can come down and say hello.
Intentionally not invited, Mark, but thank you.
That place in Chicago that I played 5,000 people starts with a B. Starts with a B.
Beckett City.
No.
Belly Dance Palace.
I'll let you know. I'll figure it out.
Barnyard Franklin.
Rodney Dangerfield had a name, Bitchley. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, Bitchley.
Was it downtown?
No. This was out a little bit. Maybe
Broadway Playhouse, Briar Street Theater.
No.
Music Box.
No.
Broadway Playhouse.
No.
Mark, come out when I'm in Chicago together.
All right, man. Good to see you guys.
Well, thank you very much. Great afternoon.
Certainly. Good fun, y'all. Good fun. Take care of yourselves.
You too. Be well. Drive fast.
Thanks so much for having us. It was a good hang.
Indeed. Indeed.
So long. I shall sell my soul. Bankrupt. Bankrupt. Bankrupt.